Hey, this is Jeremy. Just wanted to hop on before the episode started with a few announcements. We really want to hear from you, and perhaps the best way to do that, we actually have a subreddit now. It's just r/polyphonicpress, and I'll leave a link to it in the show notes. But it's always been my dream to have a community where we can all get together and talk about the albums that we review and just music in general. So if you want to join the community and start the community, really, because it's quite small right now, it's just r/polyphonicpress. And you can always help out the show in various ways. You can check out our Patreon and get these episodes the day before that they go live, and leave a rating and a review on Apple Music or Spotify or wherever you're listening. Those are great ways to get in touch with us as well. That's it. I just wanted to say that. And now on to the episode. Thank you.
Polyphonic Press, the podcast where two music fans pick a classic album completely at random. Using the patented random album generator, they are given an album to review from a curated list of over 1,000 classic releases, spanning multiple genres. And now onto the show. Here are your hosts, Jeremy Boyd and John Van Dyke.
All right, hey, welcome to Polyphonic Press. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
And I'm John Van Dyke.
And let's not waste any time. We've got the patented random album generator right in front of us here. So let's hit the button and see what album we're going to be listening to this week. And the album we're going to be listening to is John Cale, Paris 1919.
Okay.
I think John Cale was a member of the Velvet Underground.
Yeah.
But I know nothing of his solo stuff or anything like that. But so anyway, so here's what it says on allmusic.com. It says, one of John Cale's very finest solo efforts, Paris 1919, is also among his most accessible records, one which grows in depth and resonance with each successive listen, a consciously literary work. The songs even bear titles like Child's Christmas in Wales, Macbeth, and Graham Greene. Paris 1919 is close in spirit to a collection of short stories. The songs are richly poetic, enigmatic period pieces, strongly evocative of their time and place. Chris Thomas's production is appropriately lush and sweeping, with many tracks set to orchestral accompaniment. Indeed, there's little here to suggest either Cale's noisy, abrasive past or the chaos about to resurface in his subsequent work. For better or worse, his music never achieved a similar beauty again.
Okay.
Curious. So this album was released on the 25th of February, 1973. The genres are art pop, baroque pop, and chamber pop. Label is Reprise Records and produced by Chris Thomas. And it has 9 songs on the album, and it's split between side one and side two. And what we like to do is we take a break after the first half or the first side of the album. So it starts off with Child's Christmas in Wales and ends, the first side ends with Macbeth. So we'll take a pause there if you're listening along, which we encourage you to do. And I've linked the album to both Spotify and Apple Music, so you can get it on your preferred streaming service. Okay, so here we go. Here's the first song on the album, Child's Christmas in Wales. Here we go. All right, and ending side one with Macbeth. This is really interesting.
Yeah, I'm sort of, you know, I think it took a little bit while for me to sort of get into it, but it's definitely it's interesting. I noticed like little shades of, the Endless Plane of Fortune reminds me a lot of Moody Blues. Hanky Panky Know How could have been a Velvet Underground track.
Yeah. I was actually thinking, like, I was hearing the influence that this album had on future music, and I'm hearing a lot of stuff that, like, Wilco would do.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, a lot of the arrangements and some of the sort of funky stuff that they would do. That whole sort of roots rock indie sort of sound of the 90s and 2000s.
Yeah.
And then Macbeth, that's more like a glam rock sort of thing of the early 70s, you know? So there's quite a bit going on here. But all the, like, the songs are really well written. Like, sometimes it takes me a while to get into slower stuff. Like, sometimes I have to get myself into the mood for it. But this right away kind of, I don't know what it was, if it was the production or the arrangements or I don't know what it was, but it's, or maybe I'm just in the mood for it already. But I found it very easy to get into.
Yeah, no, I do think that the songs are actually very quality. The production is pretty good. Sometimes I think his voice is a little bit an interesting. I would call it interesting. I mean, it's his voice, so you know he can't really help that too much. I would call it sort of an interesting choice on something like the song Macbeth. It's not the sort of singer I would have picked for the song, but again, it's his song, so sang it.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. You know, and it's cool too, because the his voice, it does fit the other songs. Like, it's, but yeah, you're right, it does feel a little out of place on that song. The other thing that's cool about this album too is on electric guitar you have Lowell George.
Oh, really?
On drums you have Richie Hayward, both from Little Feat.
Yeah, that's really cool.
They're the band. I don't know the other guys. Wilt, you might know them. Wilton Felder on bass and Chris Thomas on tambourine. But yeah, Lowell George and Richie Hayward are on guitar and drums. Which, you know, if like Lowell George is a great songwriter and guitar player in his own right.
I know.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm a big Little Feat fan, for sure. I think, was it Andalusia that sort of reminded me a little bit of Emmett Rhodes, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I can hear that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe it was sort of the production. I mean, obviously his voice sounds nothing like his, but other mm-hmm. things about it did. And just, I don't know, some of the instrumentation and other things just reminded me of Emmett Rhodes for some reason. I thought that was kind of cool.
And it's, you know, it's interesting too, because I don't know about, maybe I'm like sort of in a bubble, but when I think of like Velvet Underground, my mind immediately thinks of Lou Reed, and then you think, well, Lou Reed had a very successful solo career after that, and but it's cool because just getting a sense of the time that this was released, it almost universally got like high reviews, and it's so this is straight from Wikipedia. It says Paris 1919 was released to warm critical reception. Rolling Stone writer Stephen Holden deemed it a masterpiece and one of the most ambitious albums ever released under the name of pop. He found that the songwriting requires a great deal of listening in order for its full implications to be perceived. In In Let It Rock, Mick Gold said that Paris 1919 has more humanity and humor than anything I've previously associated with Cale. And Gold wrote that Cale loves style and chaos in equal quantities, and he's never married them better than on this album, and concluded that John Cale has succeeded in producing an album that is more accessible than his previous work without sacrificing his ability to evoke unvisited planets, and he has set his images in music that combines simplicity with subtle detail. Reviewing an import copy of Paris 1919 Sounds magazine, Martin Heyman noted that the songs were closer to rock music than classical music and described the record as a more satisfying collection than the last effort, calling it a brilliant and indispensable album. And I definitely agree with the previous review that said he's successful in producing an album that is more accessible without sacrificing his ability to like explore. And I totally agree with that. Like, it's easy to listen to, but it's not pablum. Exactly.
It's still somewhat challenging, but it's not so challenging that you can't sit and listen to it. It's a nice balance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I guess we will get into the second side of the album, and it starts with the title track, Paris 1919. So here we go.
All right.
Okay, and ending the album with Antarctica starts here. Yeah, I mean, the second side was more quality songs. I really liked the title track, Paris 1919, with just the strings. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. It was very Beatlesque, actually.
It was, yeah, it sort of reminded me of a more upbeat Eleanor Rigby.
Something like that. Yeah, it's definitely along those lines, or it could have been... It was one of those things that sort of led in one of those. It sounds like something like a Beatles song, one of the Beatles songs that would have led into the psychedelic era or something. It was very very well written, and I love the way the melody was written and the just the little quirks of the melody. Anyway, let's put it that way.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. I mean, it's he has that. Almost, he has that thing that Joni Mitchell has, where she, like I was saying before, she has this way of fitting syllables into a melody in a very odd way, and he's kind of doing the same thing. And yeah, I mean, and then Graham Greene, that was a really good song. I mean, there isn't... I honestly don't think there's a bad song on this album.
No, I don't think so either. It is a really well written album. And everything kind of goes together too. I think Macbeth was the only one that really sort of stood apart, but even it doesn't exactly like it can go on the album. It's fine. I mean, I like the song. I just think it's the only one that sort of sits apart from the rest of the album.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, should it have been left off the album? I don't think so. I think it's okay. I think it's okay on the album. It doesn't exactly fit, but nothing really does. Like nothing, there isn't anything that
it's not a concept
album. Same. Yeah, it's not a concept album.
Yeah.
Although the title might suggest it could be a concept album.
Yes.
You know, but I don't think it really is.
No, I don't think it is.
I think he was definitely going for a certain sound because like I know almost nothing about his solo work, but from what I can understand, the stuff that was before this one and after was a little more rock oriented.
Probably.
This was sort of an outlier in his discography. You know, it's, but I think, I don't really know where I was going with that, but I think he's experimenting, and I think he's going for a certain sound on this one.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a concept in Sonic. It's a concept. It's sonically, it's almost like a concept album, but thematically, it's not really. Everything is, every song is a standalone song.
Yeah. No. And, it's, yeah, I mean, I don't quite know what else to say about it. I mean, it's, I think what I will say is maybe like this is him, like, I don't know if Lou Reed might have had the more successful solo career, but I think maybe this is sort of him distinguishing himself from maybe his past in the Velvet Underground and sort of saying, okay, well, what can I do? This is my sound. This is my thing that I can do. That might be what he was thinking going into it, but...
could be. And then he decided, well, I actually like to rock more.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's still a really good album though.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I guess that brings us to the question of, would you listen to this again?
Yeah, I think I'd listen to this again.
Yeah. Yeah, I would too. For sure. Yeah, I think every song is well done, and yeah, I would absolutely listen to it again. So I guess we'll end the episode there. Thank you so much for listening. If you made it this far, we want to hear from you, whether you agree or disagree with our review of the album. And, you can do that by going to the contact page of our website, polyphonicpress.com/contact. And, while you're there, you can check out previous episodes and lots of cool stuff there. And if you feel inclined and you want to help out the show, you can always do that by going to our Patreon. It's patreon.com/polyphonicpress. And you can get these episodes a day before they release to the public. And I think that just about does it. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
I'm John Van Dyke.
Take it easy.